Welcome to Backup Pushes Heavy Networking, a podcast on data networking for professionals that want to know more, be informed about the industry, and improve their work. In this sponsored show with VRV Solutions, we're diving into network performance management and security. Now, for many of us, the focus on network observability, that visibility, that monitoring, has become much more front and center as we put the days of ping and traceroute behind us. Now, for many years, they have been the only tools, but you may have noticed that we're seeing a pretty substantial increase in podcasts where we are talking about visibility and monitoring and observability tools being the thing that matters. And that's a reflection of customers going back to the vendors and saying, it's not enough to just have a network working. We need to know how well it's working and why it's working, and more importantly, to troubleshoot it properly. And so that leads us to VRV Solutions, who have a substantial portfolio of products. And today we're focusing on the Observer family of products for not only their network performance monitoring, which is absolutely key and something they've been doing for many years, but we're also talking about how to use the Observer family for networking security. So before we leap into it, I just want to quickly introduce our guest today, Charles Thompson, Senior Director of Product Management for VRV Solutions, and Mike McGrath, who's the Partner Director there at VRV Solutions. Let's go straight into an elevator pitch. So just to tell you who VRV is and very quickly what they are, Charles, hit me with it. What does VRV Solutions do?
Yeah, Greg, so thanks. You know, basically, VRV Solutions, we like to say, you know, enables the connected world. Everything from fiber to the home, you know, next generation 5G wireless networks, the biggest, baddest data centers in the world, all taking advantage of VRV technology to do, you know, literally everything from test and turn up through daily operations and management. The portion of our technology that we're going to be talking about today focuses on three key areas. The first is manage daily network operations. The second is mitigate the impact of planned and unplanned network changes. And the third is solve the most difficult performance and security challenges around.
So the trinity of network operations, not just the buy, but also the operate.
Yes, indeed. It's really about what we term operational excellence.
Okay, so VRV Solutions is about, and today we're talking about the Observer portfolio. What are the sort of products inside of that portfolio? For people who haven't heard of VRV Solutions before, what are the core products that we're promoting here today, and then going to talk a little bit about how they help you?
Yeah, there's a handful of technology if we kind of build it from the top down. At the top of the pyramid, if you will, is Observer Apex, which is our operationalized dashboarding, reporting, and analysis platform. That's got, you know, all the machine learning technology in it, and it really provides that window into the world of VRV insights. Then the data sources underneath are comprised of things like Observer Gigastore, capturing and viewing every packet that exists on the network, retaining them for deep forensic analysis, and then also producing metadata that feeds up into Observer Apex, as well as Observer Gigaflow, which is all about next generation flow-based technologies from IPFIX, NetFlow, SFlow, JFlow, enriching that content into what we call an enriched flow record. And again, feeding that information up into Observer Apex and retaining every flow all the time for deep forensic investigations.
So packet capture, packet store, and the storage of that data, and then flow capture and the storage of that in a series of appliances, but also the tools that sit on top to do the visibility. And I think the one that we're also is just starting to emerge is this multi-cloud capability as well.
Yeah, that's right. So anytime that you're dealing with the hybrid environments, you're always needing to understand the impact of transitions from traditional infrastructure to cloud-based infrastructure, as well as the coexistence in a hybrid cloud environment. You're dealing with both traditional on-prem environments and cloud-based environments simultaneously. So having a technology portfolio that easily encompasses all of those different aspects into one vision or one pane of glass is critical.
Okay, so let's move on to what we want to talk about today. The first, we want to talk about two parts, network performance management and network security. Let's kick off with performance management. I guess every vendor's got a way of looking at this. So I guess the opening discussion I want to have is, what's your definition of network performance management?
Well, you know, when you think about network performance management, what it really boils down to is meeting the user expectations, right? User experience is what network performance management is really ultimately all about. And so while a lot of organizations like to focus on individual metrics like response times or number of application errors which are occurring, VRV tends to focus a little bit higher level than that and think about the user experience and the impact of these individual metrics on how the users experience the applications and services that we use every day.
So can you talk a little bit more about how you actually put all of this data together to come up with something like a measure of user experience? How are you getting that?
So VRV created what we call the end user experience score. That end user experience score actually brings together hundreds of different individual metrics and calculations and produces a 1 to 10 scale score that's very easy to quantify for an end user, whether or not all of the different underlying metrics are actually having a substantive impact on the user's experience. So while, for example, a very slight degradation in response time might not seem like a big issue, depending on the structure of the application, how that data communication works, and the number of acts and the average frame size that's happening and those types of things, it can actually have a substantive impact on the user's experience of the application.
So you're using the packet monitoring capabilities to measure the user experience. Sometimes what people do is put things on endpoints, or they put probes out there. But the other way to do it is to capture the packets and inspect them. And that's the core value here.
Exactly right. It's from the network perspective. So it makes instrumentation very, very simple and straightforward. But it also means that you have that sort of independent perspective on what's occurring.
And it's an absolute source of truth, because the network packets don't lie. End users are getting an endpoint out there. The endpoints themselves can impact the measurement. You know, you haven't got enough CPU, the endpoint monitoring may not run. Or the other weaknesses with probes is you've got to get probes out there, and do they accurately represent? But capturing packets and doing the analysis is an absolute source of truth.
Yeah, I mean, the saying is a bit trite, and, you know, it's been around for a long time, but it's hard to argue, right? Packets represent what actually transpired on the wire. It's actually what occurred. It's what was sent from the device and what was received by the other end. And so it's a great source of content, a great source of information on what's actually happening and how things are being experienced.
But what about the rest of the network? You need the flows, boy. You need the flows.
So tell me why the flows are different from the packets.
Coverage.
Right.
You can't get your probes everywhere. I'm out in the edge.
Yep.
So great, you know what's going on at the center. What about the guys in the edge?
Mm-hmm.
So if you can't get your probes out there, you use the next best thing. You have an aggregate of packets going through a router. Why not use them? And so what we're trying to do is use that for performance.
So what you're saying there is that the flow data has a more impact because it measures everything. So, for example, the reason I like flow data sometimes is when I'm monitoring the IPsec VPN performance. It's very difficult to put probes on the other side of an IPsec VPN. That makes sense. But if you're monitoring the actual packets coming across the network, then that makes more sense.
Well, I'll give you a simpler one. What I'm doing with it is that basically I was challenged. I'm working with a retail outlet here where I'm based here in Ireland at 1,000 outlets. And every so often, the retailer was blaming the network for the poor performance of the credit card transaction. Simple. It's the most important application they've got.
Mm-hmm.
And effectively, what I was doing is I was using flow records to see when flow record was created on the way in to the back of the router on the LAN side, and then looking at the DSL, and you could see a flow record being produced on the WAN side, and you could just subtract the two millisecond timestamps on the flow record, and you could see, oh, it's 14 milliseconds last Tuesday. I don't think it's the network. Better start looking at the point of sale, and of course,
look at the endpoint. So it was the point of sale app. Whatever was, the device.
Yeah, exactly. But what we've achieved then since is actually building a system so that you can define credit cards. Or what we really like to do when we start off with the product is DNS, the most critical application everybody has, and the one that they need to know how it's performing. And again, so the DNS is only going to, with its one packet, it's going to create one flow record on the way up. And a flow record on the way down with just one packet entry.
Mm-hmm.
And subtract it two times and you've got first packet response.
So how would I capture that? If I'm capturing flow data at the edge of the network, would I have a flow collector remote at that point?
No. Mm-hmm. If you had 1,000 sites, you get the flow records coming up to your hosted on-prem collector if you want, and receiving all the flow records, and every single DNS request and reply, I'm waiting for the reply,
okay. And
I'm calculating that time, and I'm inserting that into the flow record.
So what happens if I've got limited bandwidth in the WAN? Because sometimes sending flow records over the WAN isn't a bright idea. Because maybe I've got a major branch which has got a large headcount, and sending that much traffic might be a problem. Can I collect locally and aggregate?
You can, but we never have had to. Because, again, you know, most of the traffic is being downloaded to the site, so your uplink is actually less used. And don't forget, it's an aggregate. You know, it's an aggregate of the packet seen, so it doesn't have data content. And the other big thing that people have seen as well is the speed of connection. So What's happening now is that what took 4 minutes to download is now taking 1 minute. So instead of getting four flow records, one per minute, I'm getting one because it happened within the minute.
Yeah, I'm exaggerating slightly because flow records don't actually take a lot of bandwidth, but it's something that people often talk about and they've never. But it's
called an insincere objection.
That's me, insincere objections. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So are you able to do full flow records, or are you just sampling, or do you have recommendations?
No, we. So effectively what we're looking for is that there's a number of different levels to flow. I don't worry, I'll give the flow back to the packet land now in a minute to Charles in a second. it's essentially what I'm looking for is high fidelity forensics from flow, right? Mm. So what we're looking to do is generate a repository of flow records that reflect every single flow record that's been sent to us. And there's two levels then. So effectively, people are familiar with flow from, it's 20-something years. I think it's 22 years now in existence. And effectively, people are familiar with the standard source destination IP, source destination port, and so forth. What we've had then is what we call with the next generation IP fix, where it became kind of standardized and Cisco rewrote their NetFlow stack on their routers and switches and things like that. We got extended fields, like app like NBAR2 is an app ID field, right? Now it's a little bit more complex than that, but we'll start off with a simple, it's telling me the application. It's an extended field above and beyond the standard definitions that we used to have. And then one of the other things that differentiates us is that we spend a lot of time pulling back ARP and CAM tables from switches and routers, particularly the ARP table to pick out IP to MAC relationships. And this is what we call stitching. So we built a stitched fabric of user to IP to MAC to interface to VLAN to switch all over time. And with that relationship built, when we see a flow record with an IP that we recognize as having a user, we'll insert the user into that flow record. And we'll insert the MAC address if we know a MAC address for either the source or destination or both.
So that's where the visibility comes in, is you're actually correlating multiple sets of data to make it usable?
Yeah. Yeah. It means then you're overriding the issues of DHCP because you know what's been allocated in IP at that particular time to that MAC and inserting that in the flow record. So when the question is, what about patient zero or Mary last Tuesday that's complaining at the point of sale, what address did it have? We know that. And then we can actually filter based on either the MAC or the IP or the user. But it's in the flow record.
So this additional data that you can add to the record creates that high fidelity and allows you to more accurately troubleshoot.
It allows us to do some things at a higher level that you could never do without having the original MAC address.
And a big part of it is it allows you to pinpoint what you're actually interested in, right? So being able to have the detail around the MAC address or stitching together information that comes out of the LDAP environment so that you've got the actual username gives you so much better isolation of exactly what you should be interested in, how it's structured, and where it exists. And then it allows you to be able to do deep dives, whether you want to do a forensic deep dive into the flow records, or you want to be able to take that insight and say, all right, now I'd really like to actually see what content was being passed, and I want to pivot over to the packet-based view. In either environment, you've always got the ability because all the records are there, whether it's all the packets or all the flows, and all this context that's being stitched on top of the traditional, call it semi-rudimentary flow records, just adds so much additional insight that as you're troubleshooting, you're not guessing, you're not going down the wrong path too often. It's literally keeping you right on track and giving you exactly what you need to be able to take that next logical step in your progression.
And that's both from a point of view of that's giving you visibility so you can be proactive. But what about from a reactive point of view? So if I'm an operational person and somebody rings up and says, you know, my branch officer is running slow today. Is the network broken or blah, blah, blah? What about operationally? How does that work? Can anybody use this stuff? Does the interface simple enough to use?
It's trivial enough. I mean, everything's there in a certain context. Actually, that's the big thing about coming into VIAVI. What I have an opportunity to gain being the new boy in the block coming into with the lads is the experience they've had on user interface and machine learning as derived by the end user experience that Charles was talking about earlier. That just kind of blew my mind that the lads have achieved so much with packets. I'm looking forward to achieving the same with flow. But to answer your question, I mean, that's the easy stuff. I mean, the world of seeing a busy interface and what's making it busy is kind of what NetFlow was expected to do from day one. I think it's trying to take it to places that it's never been before.
So what do you mean by that? Does that mean you focused on user experience and making it easy for people? Does that mean an operator can program the interface to their personal needs, or does it need to be set up by somebody like me?
Well, it's all of that. And that's one of the reasons I've been called by the venture capitalists when I went over to California over a year and a half ago, that I was a Swiss Army knife. I do too many things. I'm like a kid with a toy and constantly making new elements out of it. So that's why we're going to end up talking about network performance related issues and things that we can solve with security. I mean, at the end of the day, what I'm trying to do is I'm saying, look, I'm coming from the sewer of IT. I'm a plumber.
Yeah,
I'm an old CPIE, right? So I've been building these networks and looking at this stuff for years, and I'm fascinated by SD-WAN, just absolutely fascinated by it, by the idea that what are we actually doing? So what I'm looking at is effectively, you know, where Charles will come from historically will be, I'm going to tap in, I'm going to plug in, and I'm going to watch the packets on the fly. And because I have the packets, I have the content, I have a huge advantage. And that's why I'm partnering and coming in as part of the team with Viavi, because I see the best in the world at packet capture and packet analysis and deriving, you know, a problem domain. What I'm trying to do is a different approach. And that's why we complement so well. I'm going, hang on, there's a box out there. What's it do? It routes. It makes a decision to send packets one way or the other. What have we got here? Oh, that's a proxy. What does it do? It classifies and identifies based on the URL. Oh, that's interesting. I got a firewall. What's it doing? It's making a decision to pass or not block based on a set of criteria. That's interesting. What does a load balancer do? Right, it makes a decision which server is going to send. Why does it? How does it? And I say, well, okay, these are all key critical decision-making boxes, maybe from five different vendors. But what can they tell me? Because I need to know. Because if you plug in and look at a packet, you see the packet heading to the router. You don't know if the ACL is going to block it or not. You don't know which interface it went out on. But if you ask the box, it'll tell you. So why don't we ask the box?
All right. So you're talking about getting state information and configuration information from the box and start to say...
I can go to, let's take for an example, a proxy, right? It doesn't matter what the proxy is. I know that I've made this name up, so... I call it session syslog, right? So I don't care about the memory and CPU. I don't care about the config or anything like that. That's not my problem. There's, you know, the element management system is there to do that. The vendor is there to do that. Enough people know how to do that. What I'm interested in, whatever config is on that box, what is the consequence of packets going through the box? How is it classified? How is it identified? And what decision making has it made?
Right. So, and what latency it occurs, and then presenting to me.
If you can calculate it, if it's capable of calculating that, right? That's an extended field. But like one of the interesting things about a proxy is that the proxy can tell me with a bit of session syslog, right? So it could send me syslog, I'll parse it. But like take a proxy, for example. It's going to tell me who the user is to IP relationship. Now, isn't that interesting? I don't have to depend on the domain. It's actually how the proxy sees it. It tells me the URL and it tells me the content type, right? It's all that work done. It's built for exactly that. So why not pull that data in?
And this is what we see as the overall advantage, Greg, is essentially when you look at this environment of technology for performance and security, there's kind of always this kind of push-pull of, well, should I be using log data? Should I be using flow data? Should I be using packet data? The answer to all those questions is yes.
Yeah. Right?
Each one provides a unique perspective and a unique piece of information and insight, and they all have a role to play on that continuum of investigations, forensic deep dives, alerting, monitoring, right? There's sort of a continuum of existence, and each one of these technologies has a critical role to play. And that's where we see the opportunity at, which is not to constantly have these technologies sort of at odds, but how can you leverage the breadth and the insights that Flow can collect with the depth and the amount of just sheer valuable information that packets have, along with what the syslog actually tells you the device it intended to do, whether or not it's what actually transpired. That depends. Flows and packets will.
So then I'm getting a picture where the network performance management is my choice of data source capturing packets, and you've got appliances for capturing and storing those packets. You've got a flow collector engine, so you've got a I can collect it from the routers, bring it into my central engine, store it, analyze it. And but you're also saying I can take the syslog information or the state information from various appliances and
session.
Sorry?
What I call session syslog. So yeah. What I'm doing is, sorry to interrupt you, but
No, that's fine, go ahead. I'm trying to understand exactly what you mean, because sometimes you just say turn on syslog and you're going to get a lot of data that's not relevant.
I mean, syslog is a fascinating technology in its own right, but the reason I call it session syslog is that we're 2019, I had to stop and think there for a second. We're 2019 and we're using a method to communicate by system in a human readable form called syslog. One message, one packet.
Yeah.
Right? And then when it gets there, we've no structure on that data. And you wonder why SEMs are cranking, are actually about to fall over, right? Yeah. Or you're afraid to send them too much, or why they charge a fortune.
Yeah.
Right. To me, it's daft. I'm looking at this market for years, and I just don't understand it. And then the one thing that happened in NetFlow, when Cisco invented NetFlow, not for you or me to do capacity planning, they did it because the routers in 1995 were about to fall over with the number of packets that were coming at them. So all that NetFlow is, as people well know, it's a shortcut through a router. Yeah. Look at the first packet, identify it as unique, and shortcut it through. Mm. So
the flow routing, it was called. The idea was that most packets are actually in flows. They're, you know.
Yeah, but the essence of it was recognize a flow and shortcut it through a router. Mm. And to do that, you needed to build a cache. And the cache then had counters on it, packets and bytes. And the really, really smart thing was somebody decided, let's put this in a structured data set, which is flow record.
Yeah, let's export the data set. Why don't we create a little engine that just ejects a record every time we put a cache entry in the forwarding table? And I mean, it's so simple a thing, but it has so much impact.
It's simple, and it's machine readable. So all that IPFix version 9 and all that was, and templates and all that kind of stuff, was pointers to what the data record is going to tell you about. Mm. Like, what are the fields? What do they mean? What is the structure of them? It's completely efficient. You can get up to, originally you could get 30 records in one packet. So now you get 30 into one. So the 30, right? So that was structured. So what do I mean by session syslog, which was the question, was that what I'm doing is exactly what causes confusion, is that I don't need a syslog message to tell me the CPU is high on the proxy. That's not my job. What I'm interested in is a subset of syslog that is focused on the sessions going through the proxy.
Okay, so now turn that into something. Explain to me then a workflow. So I'm a network engineer. I've got problems with my network, and I need to do something. I've got observer set up in my system. What's the sort of – give me a workflow. Tell me a real-life story of how this works.
Okay, well, I'll tell you. There's a couple of things, right? So, okay, I'll stand right back, right? So I do it as the bank story. I go into my bank. I run up my software. And the question is asked, okay, Mike, you're going to tell me what's in the bank, in the branch. I am, yeah. I said, right, we've got a scanner here. It's our gold source of data. We say there's 51 devices. Can you match 51? I said, no, I have 55. And they go, you've made a mistake. No, well, okay, let's cross match here. I've got four extra devices. They're called ATM machines. Scanners don't get replies from ATM machines. Then I can tell them what the four interfaces are plugged, what the ATM machines are plugged into. And I go back and say, lads, these are on the same VLAN as everything else, your printers, your laptops, and everything else that's in that branch. And I said, that's not true. And I said, yes, it is. And they say, it's a different address. Well, secondaries, guys, because there's only one VLAN. Right?
Yeah.
Next point then is I say, well, look, guys, not only can I tell you where they're plugged in, what they're plugged into, I can now tell you what applications, services they're using. Mm. And there's three of them. They could give me names for two, right? One became unnamed, and I called it that, unnamed, for a while. The next thing that I've
I would have called it a lost boy or a, you know, the lost child.
Well, that's your problem.
I tend to be quite controversial in those times.
They've got my money in the bank, so I wasn't going to try and mess around with them. So be careful.
Yeah.
I was trying to be nice.
Yeah, that's right.
So the third point is the real fundamental thing that we have different when it comes back to a security posture. I was able then to define what the ATM machines communicated with, those three network services. Okay, one of which was a management service, and it had a number of different destinations. So this is what we call profiling. Mm. Well, unfortunately, we call it three things. We call it profiling, whitelisting, and acceptable usage. But take your pick. Well, what did it mean? Now, you tipped off it earlier. You mentioned the significance of the MAC potentially, right? Guess what? The ATM machines were not all on the same IP address type of strategy. Some are the old address, some are the new address.
Yeah. Some of them were deployed a decade ago and given a different setup to what the ones
at least. At least. But the interesting thing was I could find that there was 2 to 3 interface vendors. Right? So there was a consistency on the MAC vendor.
Right.
So I built what we call an entry. So basically, when the flow record is received, okay, I'm looking at, having inserted the MAC address, I'm now looking at the vendor code of the MAC address and I say, I have a filter for that. That is an ATM machine. What do ATM machines talk to? They talk to 3 different services that I have defined. Look at the rest of the flow record. Does it match any of the 3? It matches service 2. Good for that. That's a hit. Move it on. New flow record comes in, has another vendor code that matches my list of ATM vendor codes. It's talking to a service. I don't have that listed.
So what you're saying here is you're using the flow data to A, fingerprint the application. So you know that this is an ATM because it's talking to these. You can then whitelist it in the observer application and say, these types of nodes should talk to these only. And then if you meet the negative condition, that is, it's talking to something that it shouldn't be, do you then, you're saying it's throwing alert? Because we're doing network performance management here. We're doing observability and monitoring. So,
but the point would be, it could be misconfigured. It could be talking to the wrong DNS. It could be talking to the wrong service. We could have moved services across. So from a performance perspective, I need to know that as much as I need to know it from a security posture perspective.
And then the idea is that you've got automated baselining capability, right? Because who's got time to sit there and manually go through and configure literally everything about their network, what every level should be, what normal is for their customer environments, right? What is normal for your users?
Yeah, I've worked in financial networks and they get really bent out of shape around their ATMs. So yes, you do manually for that. But what about for, 500 printers across the network coming from 7 different vendors who've all got different ways of doing printing stuff? And you might have printer management software. You don't want to be spending your time fingerprinting, fingerprinting.
Or tens of thousands of unique IP sockets that happen literally every day within every organization. So the ability to auto baseline this, right? Establish a baseline of here's what normal is, and then automatically tell the organization when they're deviating from normal. Because I can say, having spent a lot of time setting up these kinds of systems within environments, static thresholds and static definitions, with the exception that's being made, right, to the point, for a few key special devices that do warrant their own type of static definitions, everything else is just, it's got to be automated. Otherwise, these systems get out of date. And their alerts become meaningless. And someone says, that screen's always red. Don't worry about that. Yeah, that alarm's going off all the time. Don't worry about that.
It's the confusing part here is that what we're actually doing here is we're actually using the same thing for management, that is operations, visibility, as we are for security story. Because if these things change outside of a baseline, that's a potential security event as well.
So now you're hitting the nail right on the head, right? If you talk to network engineers today, 85%+ of them say that they spend a fair portion of their time dealing with security-related concerns. Oftentimes, it's on the investigation side. After security believes something has happened, they're coming to investigate it. But what if you've got a platform that's watching everything that happens from the network perspective and being able to notify and perform investigations when and if things start to change, things start to look abnormal, things start to deviate, not just from a how does it impact the user experience, but also from a, to your point, what does that mean about our security posture? Have we been breached? Are we in jeopardy? And to what extent?
Or has the application changed? Sometimes it can be the application's been updated.
Absolutely.
Right.
Could be the application's been updated. Could be a new patch has been rolled out. But it could be some pretty anomalous activity that's happening within the environment. We've got a large, large financial customer. They do transaction processing all over the world. And they were in exactly that situation. They started to see their norms creeping up in some very strange ways. Way too many conversations being started that abnormally terminated. Way too many connections per hour to some critical key systems within their environment. And so they literally leveraged the portfolio to say, what's happening within the environment? Turned out they did, in fact, have a breach. But the great thing is that with Flow Records, they could identify how broadly impacted their breach had been, how many devices had been contacted, and all the whitelisting, blacklisting, profiling gives the perspective of, all right, so just how wide is this breach? And then with the depth of packet data, they were able to go in and definitively say, yes, we've been breached, but no customer confidential information has been accessed. Nothing has been transported off of the network. And so it didn't flag any of the compliancy regulations for notifications and those types of things. It literally saved the reputation of the organization and, you know, massive amounts of fines by simply being able to answer the question, how wide was the breach?
And did they reach the honeypot? Did they reach the
Was anything actually jeopardized? That's exactly
how
it.
How far did they get lateral? You know, they usually call that lateral movement. Once you're in, you want to start moving laterally through the network to find data of value. And you were able to prove that, yes, they were in, but they hadn't got to the point where, you know, restricted data had been breached and exfiltrated.
And suddenly it becomes a very different classification of breach. So when we talk to these organizations, right, network security, call it an $11 billion market. Forensic investigations, right? The amount of money spent on the sort of remediation step of network security, call it $200 million. It's a fraction, which means that everyone's betting on it won't happen to me, right? And look at the past 12 months and the breaches that have occurred.
There is a key transition here, and we're getting away from just what Viavi is doing, but you know, we're seeing things like the North Koreans and the Iranians are enabling cybersecurity to be a revenue generation source. So they're not doing it to steal data as much as they're doing it to try and extract money to prop up their governments. We're seeing the Chinese and the Indian and the Russian governments do it as a way of industrial espionage, literally capture that information and give it to their local industries. So I think the security posture is changing a lot. But what I like about the Viavi approach and the way that we're talking about the Observer product here is that I can use it not just for security, but also for performance mentoring. So I don't have to have one solution for network performance management, budgeting, pricing, ROI, negotiating with everybody. I can still use it as a security tool as well. So for a mid-sized organization, mid to large, this is a tool that's that does multiple things perhaps.
But
not only that, but you suddenly have your two different operations groups, your NetOps and your SecOps groups, speaking the same language, leveraging the same tool sets, leveraging the same workflows. And suddenly you just exponentially increase your resource to put on a problem because you've got folks that are all speaking the same language, using the same tools, using the same terminology, having the same perspectives. They're not arguing about the purity of the data or whether or not flow A is better than flow B. They're literally leveraging the same source of insight. And so suddenly, you know,
I see what you're saying. If you've got the security team using tool A and the networking team using tool B, then all of a sudden they say, but I'm not seeing that. And you start having to cross-reference the two to get to a single source of truth or a single truth. So I guess one of the questions here is we've talked about cross-referencing the data, and so the performance management and security is the same thing. Does this mean then that it's a tool consolidation? So instead of having one security tool or multiple security tools and multiple performance monitoring tools, I can consolidate this into one. Is it a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a good thing, but it's start and it kind of highlights a bigger problem that's out there at the moment is that, let's say you have a tool like Symantec and FireEye and things like that. How do they agree on what the definition of a site, a device, an application, or a human being is? How do you get to intercommunicate?
Yeah, different function, different way.
Standards. There's absolutely no standards.
Is at the end of the day, every vendor's different because, to Mike's point, there are no standards. And so as you try and get the NetOps group and the SecOps group to speak the same language when they're trying to resolve problems, it becomes very difficult because organization A says, we're talking about a given site. Organization B says, yeah, we're talking about the same site, but underneath the covers, two very different definitions exist. And that goes to Mike's point, the lack of standards. So it's one of the challenges that's keeping the silos of IT up, is that there is, you know, a lack of standards and a lack of ability to effectively communicate. But to your point from earlier, when you get everything inside of, you know, call it one technology umbrella, you start to have multiple groups being able to speak the same language, use the same workflows, the same troubleshooting processes, whether it's for performance or security remediation, and suddenly you just gain efficiencies that you can't hardly even imagine.
Yeah. So you're saying instead of having to argue about tools and standards, you can say, we've got the packets. Let's just go to the packets.
Well, no, it's actually what I'm trying to get to is I'm trying to become the translator in certain respects. Like I see an opportunity for us as we have, given the critical mass, we're not shipping other boxes, as in we're not in the networking industry to ship you a type of box or anything like that. We're there for high fidelity forensics and the ability then to pass information or allow systems to communicate. So we can, I made up a title for myself, partner director, because I see an opportunity of working with some of the other vendors, the key vendors out there, and engaging with them and understanding how they can define what they see. Like if you take, say, like a Symantec and Symantec Manager, it doesn't really have a concept of sites. It's a concept of agents talking back to it. It's not aware, does it have all the agents or doesn't have the agents? But I could become aware of what it knows, and then I could become aware of what other vendors out there think they know, all right? Like Microsoft, how does it work? How does it have a concept of sites and things like that? And be in a position to understand each of their definitions so that we could become the conduit.
Yeah, I think what you're trying, so let me try and read it back to you from my point of view. What we're saying is because we're using one product for both performance management and observability and the same tool for network security, I get combined language because the network security, the security teams looking at a breach are using the same language to talk about it as the networking team is saying for observability or performance. And that unifies the team around a single goal and that accelerates the time to completion.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly it. The efficiency that you gain from having everybody, you know, reading from the same sheet of music is fantastic.
And just using the same language, because each discipline has its own lingo. But if the tool underneath is the same, then everybody starts speaking the same language, I think.
Yeah.
Yep. And
there's another element as well, and we kind of touched on it earlier, is the concept of hunting, right? So what we've added into the infrastructure of the application is a thing called, and again, lads, if there's input out there, it's what we could call it something better, because we're inventing things at the moment. We call it traffic groups, right? Mm-hmm. And it's very straightforward. So basically what happens is that you can take information or site definitions of whatever you think they call subnets or whatever from an IPAM or wherever you get it, whatever form it is, and you can load it into my system, right? And so basically what it's going to do, it's like an IP address range, and it could be a single IP or it could be a subnet range or beyond, right? It could be a class A range. I don't care. But anytime I see a flow record, right, I insert the most specific version of that traffic group into the flow record as I store it. Right? Now, what does that mean? It means then that it's now become more readable or understandable and defined. So what I'm suggesting is as people hunt and they find others, it means undefined. Go look it up and add a definition as specific as you know, so that the next person that looks at this will understand what the name of it is and where it's come from.
So the system will improve over time as you classify traffic and recognize
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. And then, let's not get carried away with AI and machine learning and things like that.
Yeah.
Let's do a bit of HI here, human intelligence, right? Because you kind of need the combination here. And again, so like what I'm seeing at the moment is the challenge that we face is I need to get data into a context for a different type of audience. So a real techie audience is happy with bits and bytes and knock yourself out. I've loads of those. The challenge then for myself and Charles is to build a product together with packets, connectivity, flow, and test.
Yeah.
So that we can then present to these audiences what they need to see so that they can then dig, dive, and communicate and ask the experts, say, I don't know what this is. Or even ask the business, what the hell is this, lads? ATM guys, what's this?
Okay.
Oh, that's the new management server. Thanks. I'll be back to you next. I have another question.
Yeah. Okay. So we talked a little bit about unifying together, and we talked earlier about how the breach detection, how you know about it. Now, there are, a lot of people are facing compliance issues for that, and you're actually being asked for things like forensic replay or forensic analysis. And a lot of us today use Seams to do capture forensic data and then store them somewhere so that they can be used legally for stuff. Does the Observer product family play in that area, or is it something that I would still need to mix up with other products? Because your portfolio is very wide.
It is very wide portfolio. And to answer your question, yes, the Observer portfolio does play in that forensic investigation space for both performance as well as for security. You know, if you look at our customer portfolio, 60% of our largest accounts are using our technology today for both performance and for security. So there's a lot of overlap. There's a lot of common use cases. One of the biggest challenges that you run into whenever you're trying to leverage these types of technologies for forensic investigations, especially those that are related to security investigations, is the fidelity or the quality and completeness of the content. Right. Because there's not a product out there that's trying to omit information, but you know, whether it's happenstance or whether it's, you know, call it poor technology architecture, things like loss happens all the time. Systems get overrun and suddenly a bit of very important forensic evidence is suddenly gone. Deduplication, right? Aggregation, pruning, top end. These things all start to omit information, which is fine if you're just looking to understand conceptually what's happening within the environment. But when you're dealing with the forensic investigations like you're talking about, you absolutely have to have everything all the time.
Yeah, and I mean, because this week Equifax is up in court, which is, that's on top of mind. They're sitting in front of Senate trying to explain why they were so casual. And I was thinking, if I was in that situation, how I would prove the depth of the breach. And if I had to go up in front of a court of law and do the packet playback to justify the fact that I wasn't, you know, if I claim that I am not breached, I have to be able to prove that case, because there may not be data to find anymore because it might have been stolen silently. Like, they've never found the Equifax data, for example. So this forensic replay can be the only way that you can defend yourself. And there's multiple parts to forensics. It's the rate of data capture, and it's also storing it for a long enough period to meet your retention requirements.
So that's exactly right. So anytime you're dealing with those types of investigations where you have to deal with what systems were accessed or what was exfiltrated from the network, that forensic purity always gets called into question. And people ask the hard questions about what was obtained, what was retained, how can we know for sure that what was there is actually what transpired on the network? Mm-hmm. And that's where you get into these conversations of lossless capture, knowing that you have everything all the time, being able to keep up with the ingress rates, and also ensuring that you're not doing any of these, call them optimization technologies like the pruning and the deduplication, that are designed for saving space on disk and designed for helping manufacturers cope with the volume of information, but at the expense of the fidelity and the purity that the customers require.
So this is where the Gigastore appliance comes in, because you've got a custom box with specialist software that can actually just store packets efficiently and at speed and flow and, you know, whatever. But you've actually got your own highly optimized app to run at speed here.
Yeah, and it's not just Gigastore, right? Gigastore is the packet-based analysis function, right? So that's capturing and retaining every packet. The same is true for Gigaflow, right? Mm-hmm. Capturing and retaining every flow. So the philosophy for the organization is we have to have forensic purity. We have to be able to go back and answer every conceivable question and not simply say that information was discarded or it was top end off or it was pruned out because of the way we organized our structures of data. Whether it's packets or flow, you've got to have everything all the time. Otherwise, you will inevitably be left with questions when it comes to an investigation at the level of which we're talking about here.
Now, I want to jump a little bit here to Observer Analyzer, which is for unified communications. This was, if you're capturing packets, you've got a unique way of looking at UC.
Well, right. So anytime that you're actually dealing with the transport of the content, you know exactly what transpired, I guess, is probably the easiest way to look at it.
You can actually measure the call, because a lot of the SIP packets aren't encrypted, so you can read the payload and actually monitor what calls were made to who and so on and so forth, although SIP's starting to be encrypted. You can actually monitor voice performance from just the packet flows.
Right. So you're sitting as an independent observer on the wire, and you know, certainly decryption technologies exist. So if you're using secure SIP, if you're encrypting your RTP channels like a lot of organizations are beginning to do, you still have the ability to gain visibility into whether it's just the simple call records that you want, or if you want to be able to analyze jitter and calculate MOS scores and even be able to do playbacks for quality analysis and other purposes, all that's capable because you're capturing from such a true and honest point of independence on the wire.
And I guess one thing I want to mention here, which a lot of people don't think of, if you've never heard of a network tap, talk to your VRV solutions person about them. These are literally devices where you can plug your fiber optic in and a fiber optic out, and then there's a third port on the interface where you can actually capture a copy of the data and send it off. It's an invisible way of capturing packets without relying on your switch's capability. And it is far better, in my opinion, to do that. And I had a conversation recently with somebody who did not know what a network tap is. So if you want to know more, that's not really what we wanted to talk about today, but you actually sell that as part of your solution so customers can get a turnkey.
Yeah, we do. You know, your point is a good one, right? Anytime you're dealing with technologies like this, there's kind of always that question sort of lurking in the back, which is, well, how do you gain access to the content? How do I get these packets? Mm-hmm. And there's technologies like SPAN or port mirrors inside of the switches. But to the point you're making, those technologies have flaws, right? They're a lowest priority operation inside of the switch. So maybe packets aren't even making it out the SPAN port. And so technologies like TAPS, TAP is actually an acronym for test access point, are literally designed to ensure that not only do you have the ability to capture everything losslessly, if your technology is capable of doing that, and luckily the VIAVI technology is, but also if you've got an environment where you've got full duplex, which almost every environment is these days, SPAN and port mirror have limitations and capabilities lacking there. So you certainly, anytime you're dealing with, you know, whether it's packets or flows, you have to think about how am I going to acquire this content? And, you know, TAPS are a great way to be able to originally acquire the packet content. And when you're dealing with flow environments, you have to think about what are going to be your best sources of content. Yeah. Just about infrastructure device.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that because a lot of people think that's the only thing they get taught in their training is that SPAN is the only way to capture packets, but TAPS are actually the way to go. The other thing about this too is that you're still multi-cloud too. I know we touched on this earlier and I called it out, but increasingly I'm becoming convinced that being able to monitor network traffic in your existing private cloud or on-prem systems as well as what's happening in the cloud is a thing. You need one tool for all of those things. For some people, not everybody needs to do it, but some people do. So you've got the same infrastructure functions happening in both places, and you've got a solution for both of those.
We do, right? So anywhere we can do physical monitoring, we can do virtual monitoring as well. So whether it's physical monitoring for packets or virtual monitoring for packets, all the same workflows, all the same capabilities exist. It's just a different deployment strategy. But there was some conversation happening earlier, and Mike brought up the point of the edge of the network, being able to monitor from the edge of the network. And, you know, it brings up the question, what is the edge of the network these days? In a borderless enterprise, what is the edge of the network? And so multi-cloud-based environments start to really complex the edge of the network even more. And obviously, BYOD and everything else really starts to skew the edges of the network. And so multi-cloud capability means that whether it's flow or packet-based visibility, you've got to have the ability to see your evolved cloud-based infrastructure in much the same way that you could your traditional environments.
Definitely. Well, on that note, I think we've probably covered just about everything we can fit in the time available today. Thanks so much to VRV Solutions for sponsoring the Packet Pushers, and thanks for them giving them the time to talk about. And we sort of got a little off track here a little bit. I think we actually went into some interesting discussions about the operation and usage of these technologies as much as we talked about VRV. So thanks very much to Charles Thompson, who's Senior Director of Product Management at VRV Solutions, and Mike McGrath, who's a Partner Director at VRV Solutions. Charles, just before we sign off today, why don't you tell people where they can find you and get more information about VRV on the internet?
Yeah, probably the best place to find out more information is go to viavisolutions.com/packetpushers and learn more about our technology. Sign up for a protocol poster. Make sure you get some wall art and take advantage of the opportunity to talk with us about the different technologies we discussed here today.
So I just want to point out that VIAVI is actually said the way it sounds. That is, you type it in as viavisolutions.com. And they do have a special landing page just for Packet Pushers listeners. And if you go in there and check out, there's some specially selected information if you want to get deeper. And you can request a poster to put on your cubicle wall not something that you see too much of this day. Maybe it's something for you, but if you register your details and get in contact with them, they'd love to send you one wherever you are. Well, as always, you can find this and many more fine free technical podcasts, along with our community blog and our whole website and show notes for this show on packetpushers.net. You can follow us on Twitter at @packetpushers. You can find us on LinkedIn and follow us where we post updates about when these shows are. Like us on Facebook and rate us on Apple Podcasts. And as always, remember that last but never, ever least, too much networking would never be enough.